Hi, this is Jim Hoffman from EMS Solutions, and I want to welcome you to another audio session of Authorized Transmissions. Today, I'm going to be welcoming Dr. Greg Margolis from the National Registry of EMTs, and I'm going to check right now to see if Greg is on the line with us.
Hi, Jim.
Greg, are you there?
How are you
doing? How are you doing? Great, great.
Hi.
I want to thanks for joining me today. I really appreciate you taking the time out.
Oh, it's my pleasure to be here.
Greg, before we get started, what I usually like to do is give an opportunity for those that you know, do these interviews is maybe give a bio of yourself for those listening who may not really be familiar with you and your position with the National Registry, and if you can maybe just give us a quick bio on your involvement with EMS and the National Registry over the years.
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, I started my EMS career as a paramedic in the Pittsburgh area in the 80s. Always had an interest in education and EMS education. So within a couple of years, I started teaching EMS programs and then took a position as the program director of the EMS program at the University of Pittsburgh in the Center for Emergency Medicine. I spent about 15 years in as a program director of a paramedic program and remained active as a paramedic that entire time. And then after my career as an EMS educator, about 5 years ago, I came to the National Registry of EMTs as one of the associate directors.
Okay, great. Well, today I asked you for this interview. I want to try to maybe get some insight for some of the listeners on some recent changes that have been going on with the National Registry and, more importantly, the things that with the CBT exam process and some of this, the new accreditation goals that you guys are going to be coming up with. And I don't want to get too much into the general basics of the CBT or the CAT exam, since there really is a lot of information as well as videos just on the National Registry website alone, as well as a lot of articles that have been written about it. But I think we can do maybe is talk about a few key points that might give some potential students or some potential students a better idea of what the exam is all about and maybe what they can expect.
Sure. We're really very excited about the transition from paper and pencil testing to computer adaptive exam or computer-based exams. I think the most important thing to keep in mind is that the new exam format is not simply the old exam placed on a computer.
Right.
We were fortunate enough to be able to implement an entirely different algorithm for the delivery of exam items and scoring the exam, which is known as computer adaptive testing and item response theory. Combined, these two concepts enable us to get a much more accurate and therefore fair evaluation of people's EMS knowledge and ability in a really very short period of time. So I think the important thing that people keep in mind is that the exam is adaptive, and what that means is that there is no fixed length to the exam. There's a minimum number and a maximum number of items that you can receive, and they vary a little bit depending on the level. But there's no specific number of items that people need to get. And like all other adaptive exams, the individual items that a particular candidate receives is tailored to their ability level. And what that means is we start off by giving people kind of medium level or medium difficulty level items. And if they get them right, then what happens is the difficulty of the exam item or the difficulty of each successive item gets a little bit harder. If they get the items wrong, then the items get a little bit easier. And in tailoring the exam difficulty to the individual candidate, we are able to get a much more precise evaluation of their ability.
Okay, I see. One question I know that I've been kind of bouncing out of some of the people I talk to, and just out of curiosity, they often wonder, since you guys had switched this format in 2007, have you guys noticed a drop or an increase in the number of passing or failing scores with this new exam process?
We have not noticed any significant change in the pass rate nationwide.
Okay.
Most of the other professions that have made transitions to computer adaptive testing actually have noticed a small drop in pass rates, but we did not experience that. And you can imagine we looked at that very closely and,
right.
and frankly, held our breath a good bit throughout last year. But we were pleased to not have seen any significant changes on a nationwide basis.
Okay. Well, one reason why I asked that, too, is that a lot of times I kind of see it in forums, and I get a lot of emails from a lot of my members who question the exam process and what it's all about. And a lot of them that actually take it, a lot of them say that they felt it was very easy or they kind of feel it was very hard for them. And none of them really say it was kind of, well, it was so-so. It's either one way or the other. And I'm wondering, is this part of that adaptive process you were talking about, and or is it the intent of what the exam is supposed to be? Is it supposed to be feeling that way for the individual?
Well, it's an interesting observation, and I think a lot of people experience that. Most of the people that come out of computer adaptive tests, whether they're in EMS or in other professions, will generally say that they found the exam to be pretty challenging. And the reason for that is, as I mentioned before, the item difficulty adapts to the individual ability level. So really, no matter what ability level you are, you're going to get about half of the items right and about half of the items wrong. And we can talk a little bit later about how we determine pass-fail, but suffice it to say, based on what I've just said, it's not the percentage of items that you get right or wrong, it's which questions you get right and wrong. So most people aren't used to coming out of an exam feeling that they probably got 40 or 50% of the items incorrect. So as a result, most people that come out of adaptive exams feel that they were fairly significantly challenged by the exam. I think that people that walk out of the exam and thought that it was very easy, generally, my observation is that they didn't read the exam items carefully enough and may have missed items because they failed to recognize a nuance in the item itself. So one of the things that I would encourage anybody that's taking the exam to do is to slow down and make sure that you take each individual item and read it very carefully to make sure that you understand it completely and that you're not answering the right answer to the wrong question.
Okay. Well, I usually, that kind of explains a lot of people's anxiety. I think after they take the test, they always feel they failed. They're stressed out as how well they did, and they kind of feel they didn't do that well. And that could probably explain what you were talking about as far as getting 40% of the questions that they might be getting wrong. And a lot of times I tell a lot of the people that might email me, and I try to tell them that from what I've read, that the exam is kind of designed to make the test taker feel as if it is hard for them. And I always try to tell them that the questions are really based on the general knowledge that they're supposed to have and the skill level that they're testing for. And I think you might have went a little bit into this already, but I wonder if you can just give us an idea on how the exam chooses the questions, maybe, without giving too much of the inner secrets there, and maybe and how people can still be judged fairly for all the students, even though some exams might be easier for some people, maybe harder for others, since they're knowledge base might not be as thorough as somebody else going into it.
Right. And I'm glad we have a chance to talk about this, and it's a really very sophisticated question. So I'll take a few minutes to explain some of the the issues. First of all, I want to assure you and your listeners that it is not our intent or desire to try to make the exam appear to be hard or challenging. That is a byproduct of the adaptive nature of the exam. It's not it's not the intent. So we don't deliberately try to make it hard, but what we really are trying to do, and what any exam does, is makes an attempt to estimate an individual's ability. So the way that we have become conditioned to think about estimating ability in a linear exam or a paper and pencil exam is by using the percent of items that an individual gets correct as an indicator for their ability level.
Okay.
And that is was the state of the art in psychometrics, really in the first half of this century. But in the last 20 or so years, the psychometricians have been asking themselves the question: is there a better way or a more accurate way to estimate people's ability? And that's where item response theory comes into play. In item response theory, no matter what your ability level, and this is a hard concept to get your mind around, no matter what your ability level is, you're going to get about 50% of the items right and about 50% of the items wrong, because the item difficulty will adjust as the computer algorithm delivers the exam. So instead of using the number of items or percent of items that an individual gets correct or incorrect as the passing standard, what we look at is which items they get correct and incorrect. And you can kind of, if you think about this, an individual who is getting hard items right is probably a pretty high achiever. And if we give them a lot of hard items and they're consistently getting them right, even if they're very high level, and they're getting about half of them right, then that's probably a pretty high performer. If we, on the converse, if we're giving somebody lots of easy items and they're only getting about 50% of them right, they're probably a fairly low performer or have low ability.
Okay. Well, that might shed a lot of light on the exam itself and the process, I think, for a lot of people. I think maybe alleviate some of the anxiety that some people might have been feeling over it or going into it.
I think people should really try to get out of their mind the notion that they need to get 70 out of 100 correct.
Yeah, I see a lot of that.
That's really not going to happen in the adaptive nature of the exam. And most of us have, over our lifetime, have taken many, many, many linear exams. So it's natural for people to think in those terms.
Sure.
But for a high-stakes exam like this, it's important to actually put that out of your mind.
Yeah, that is very important. I'm wondering, since it started in 2007, have you guys had any major bugs that you had to work out, or were there any major issues that you had to get out of the whole process, or has it been running pretty smoothly?
There really weren't any major issues, and I think that's really a testament to the amount of cooperation and our partnership that we have with our state EMS office colleagues and the program directors that throughout the entire country have all worked together to make this, I think, one of the greatest national coordinated EMS successes in our history. So I would say that there were no real major bugs. Of course, we had many minor issues. I think the one thing that I'd like to emphasize to your listeners is how important it is to make sure you have proper ID when you show up at the test site. Unlike when we used to give the exam, where it was primarily EMS personnel that were proctoring the exam, and EMS is a fairly small community, so identifying candidates was not much of a challenge. Now we have candidates go to a professional testing center, and they're going to be testing at the same time as nurses and physicians and engineers and computer software engineers and many, many other professions, and the proctors don't know an EMS person from a anyone else. So being able to present proper identification during the law, the sign-in procedure is very important and is probably the single largest issue that we deal with. People need to show up with two forms of governmentally issued identification. Two forms of identification, one of which must be governmentally issued and must have a picture ID, and the other one must bear their signature. So, if they show up at a test site without that, they will be turned away, and that's probably the biggest issue that we have to deal with.
Okay. Well, I really think that the whole process is really become a great benefit to students overall, and I think it really offers a better provider, you know, in the end, I think, you know, being able to have the exam like this. And I also read a lot about the security and how that this new process also keeps the exam much secure and also gives results to the student a lot faster as well. And before I kind of move on to the next topic, I'm just wondering if you have any key points that we might not have touched on that you want to make on the overall CBT exam process.
Sure. I think the advice that I give to all candidates really boils down to a couple of things. One thing I think it's really important to emphasize, the reason that we went to computer adaptive testing and item response theory is that it is a more accurate and therefore more fair assessment of people's ability. And that's our primary commitment and our primary role in the EMS community. In terms of advice to candidates, I usually say two things. Number one, while the all national registry exams are timed tests, the number of people that run out of time, or the percent of people that run out of time on national registry exams, is very small. Usually about less than 1% of the people will run out of time. Now, that doesn't mean you should not pay any attention to time, but I think that it's really important for you to read every item carefully and make sure that you understand each individual item before you answer it. The other thing is you can't go back because the next item is going to depend on how you did on this item. So I suggest that people taking the exam discipline themselves to take between 30 and 60 seconds per item and make sure that even if they think they know the answer quickly, make sure that they read the entire question and all the distractors, and then select the best item or the best response. It is a best response exam, and the occasionally people will say, well, there are more than one right answer. And the fact of the matter is there may be more than one right answer, but there is one answer that is better than the other ones. And when we say better, that means either more frequently correct or more correct or correct in the majority of the time. So that's an important thing. The other thing that I like to emphasize is that on every exam, there are pilot items. And in fact, there's a fairly large percentage of pilot items, about 10 or 15 pilot items in every exam. And pilot items exist when we're not really testing the candidate, so they don't count for or against the candidate, but we're putting them out there to determine whether those are properly functioning items for future inclusion on live exams. The point here is that the candidate, the individual taking the exam, will have no idea whether a particular item is a pilot item or not. It's indistinguishable from all of the other items. So occasionally, you may get an item that you think is particularly challenging or may even include information that you might not have heard of. And the important thing is to just think, you know, that may or probably is a pilot item. Just go ahead and answer it to the best of your ability and then move on to the next item.
Okay. Well, that's some great information, Greg. I really appreciate it. Another topic that I wanted to kind of cover during this interview is is something that's kind of getting a lot of support, especially among providers, and I'm not sure how many TJ agencies are kind of going along with this right now anyway, but it's about the upcoming accreditation requirement that's going to be happening, I guess, in the next 5 years. And can you give a brief outline of what this accreditation requirement is going to be for anyone who may not have heard of it yet?
Yeah, sure. This is a big step for us as a profession, and I think there's a couple of things that I think we should emphasize. First of all, this has been talked about in our community for 20 years or so, is the requirement, or when are we going to make a requirement that paramedic education programs have to be nationally accredited, like is the case in most other professions professions in general and healthcare professions specifically. So this has been a topic of conversation for a long time. It started to become very prominent in official publications and conversation in the EMS community in the late 90s when the EMS Education Agenda for the Future was being developed, which was ultimately published in 2000. And in that document, it called for a linkage between national EMS certification eligibility and graduation from accredited institutions. And that document called for that linkage to occur by 2010. We've been deliberating this and talking about this and researching this issue for quite some time, probably more than 10 years now, and really our board of directors in November of last year, after much deliberation and consultation with the EMS community and evaluating the literature on the topic, finally made the decision that we're going to require graduation from an accredited educational nationally accredited educational institution in order to take the National Registry Paramedic Exam starting on January 1st, 2013. I'd also like to point out that this was a recommendation that was supported. The EMS Education Agenda for the Future linkage was supported by the IOM report that came out in 2006. So there was a lot of deliberation, a lot of consultation, and a lot of thought that went into this this decision, because we know it's a big step for the profession.
Sure, absolutely. Well, like I said, I think a lot of the providers are really behind it, because like you mentioned before, it's something that's been being discussed for a long time about making this, you know, really kind of advancing the profession by doing this. And I'm wondering if you think that maybe some of the teaching facilities that have the non-accredited, you know, programs, if they might abandon the program because of the requirement or because of the cost of the accreditation process?
You know, I really don't think so. There's no question that there are going to be some challenges for almost any institution that has to go through the accreditation process that hasn't already done so, because the accreditation process is based on the notion of continuous quality improvement. So, you know, all institutions, even excellent ones, often have things that they need to do in order to come in compliance with the standards and guidelines. But keeping in mind that this is all for the benefit of the student, this is all for the benefit of the profession, I think most institutions that go through the accreditation process agree that it was a process that helped them improve and helped them look at themselves in a way that they hadn't before. So,
right.
I don't see any reason why any credible paramedic program cannot achieve national accreditation.
Yeah, I guess the ones that won't go with it might be better off without it, I guess, in the long run, I guess, if they're not willing to go through it.
Well, you know, all professions get to this point, and typically what creates the tipping point is when, diploma mills start emerging
right.
That really don't have the best interest of the student or the profession in mind. I'm not sure where we are with that in our profession, but if we don't do anything, then we're going to have the emergence of programs that may not have all those things that they're as their primary interest.
Now, I know that some of the fees I saw, like for the accreditation, like between $3,000 and $5,000, you know, dollars for the accreditation evaluation and whatnot. And I'm wondering if you see any of the newly accredited schools that might, you know, might do this accreditation process, if they might try to increase their fees to make up, you know, for the cost of the accreditation and the administrative issues that you know are associated with the requirement.
There may have to be some modest increases in student tuition or lab fees or those sorts of things to cover accreditation fees, but ultimately it's the student that benefits from going to an accredited program. So in general, I think parents and potential applicants look for accreditation in order to rest assured that they are going to an educational institution that is going to provide them with a quality educational product. I think the 3,000 to 5,000 number is a little bit on the high side. I think, meaning if you spread out the accreditation costs over a 5-year period, which is the typical length of accreditation, I think most programs are spending about $2,000 to $2,500 a year on accreditation related fees. And while that's a lot of money and nothing that any program should take lightly, it takes a lot of resources to run a paramedic program, from staff and faculty and facilities and equipment. That's a relatively small investment compared to all of the other things that you have to have in place to run a paramedic program.
Right. Well, one thing I was wondering is, will the current providers that are already out there, are they going to be grandfathered into this type of thing? Are they going to be required to attend an accredited institution to maintain their National Registry certification?
This applies only to new graduates after January 1st, 2013. So it really doesn't apply to anybody that's already currently nationally certified, or even those that get nationally certified in the next couple of years.
Okay. Well, the next question is a little speculative, I guess, but I'm wondering if you think that this new requirement will actually start to elevate EMS to a more publicly recognized profession like nursing, and it may in turn increase the salary ranges that a lot of, you know, paramedics are making, and maybe even make it more attractive to potential students out there.
Yeah, as a paramedic myself, I'm obviously very interested in moving our profession forward, but I do want to make sure that I'm very clear that while that may be a byproduct of this move, it isn't the primary purpose. The primary purpose of accreditation is to protect the student and make sure that students who sometimes are not in a position to be able to evaluate the quality of an educational program are protected. Now, so that's really the main focus and why we've gone in this direction. I do think that, as you mentioned earlier, a logical byproduct, and for those people that watch the evolution of professions, will recognize that this is generally a step towards increased professionalization and increased credibility. And whether that results in salary increases and those sorts of things, I'm not really quite sure. I am, however, concerned of the flip side, meaning I do see if we fail to make these steps, then number one, some students may be placed increasingly in jeopardy, and we do have situations in which paramedic students show up after paying a company $4,000 or $5,000 or $6,000 or $10,000 for tuition for a paramedic class, and they just show up and there's a padlock on the door and they've vanished. So there really are cases of situations in which EMS students have been subjected to unfair.
You there?
I am.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. I lost you there in the middle of the conversation. I really apologize for that.
Oh, no problem.
I'm not sure when all that's one of the first times that's ever happened to me. I was a little baffled there for a moment. Really apologize for that.
Oh, that's okay.
Well, you know what? I don't want to spend too much time. I know we're kind of running out of time, especially now that we missed about a minute or so there. And I guess we still got 5 years before, you know, we get to start really seeing major effects from this accreditation process. And I think most providers and most people in the field really do, like you mentioned, they see it as a big step in the right direction and are really excited to see EMS moving forward. And again, like I said, a little short on time, and I do really appreciate you joining me today. And do you have any last words on either the accreditation process or the CBT exam before we end the call today?
Well, I agree with you, Jim. I think this is really an exciting time in EMS. And, you know, all these things are really moving towards increasing our credibility as a profession. And I really am excited to be in a position to see where things go in the next decade or so.
Okay. Well, the one last thing I like to do, I always like to give the participants that come and join me on these sessions a chance to let the listeners know of anything that's upcoming that you might be working on, any place you might be appearing, any books you're involved in writing, anything like that, and just, you know, give you a chance to let anyone know about that they can be on the lookout for.
Well, we'll be attending EMS Expo and the National Association of EMS Educators meeting, and hope to see some of your listeners there. We also have a pretty aggressive state visit program where we try to, or where we get out to all the states every other year or so, and we coordinate those with the state EMS offices, so hopefully we'll be able to see some people there. And I encourage people to visit our website. I think there's a lot of information there that'll help them about the national EMS certification process and about the national registry in general. And also keep an eye out for some webinars that we're going to be conducting in the next year or so to help explain some of the details of this and many other exciting things going on at the national registry.
Okay. Well, I'm going to put a link to the national registry website on my website as well. And it's nremt.org, right? That's the primary web address?
Yep, and from there you can launch to any of the other functionality of the website.
Okay, great. Well, Greg, we're just about out of time. And, again, I want to really thank you for joining me today. And maybe in the future we can get together and maybe focus on some more issues that are facing EMS and the National Registry and how you guys are really trying to improve the profession.
It's been a pleasure.
All right, Greg. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Well, that was Dr. Greg Margolis from the National Registry. I hope you guys enjoyed this audio. I apologize for a little bit of a break we had there because of some glitch in the system. Not sure what was going on with that. But I think we did get a lot of really great information from Greg and some really great insight. And I hope you guys visit the National Registry website and, you know, get a good picture of what's going on there. And they have a lot of great information there about the CBT exam, about the accreditation process, and the whole application process to get your National Registry certification. Again, if you have any questions, you can always email me at jhoffman@ems-safety.com. Be sure to check the website at ems-safety.com. for more audio interviews that we've conducted in the past and for upcoming interviews in the future. Until then, I hope you all stay safe out there, and this is Jim Hoffman for EMS Solutions.